Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. I want to first thank my Heavenly Father for waking me up this morning and for blessing me. And I want you guys to please bear with me because I know I was doing a lot of bleeps and blunders as I was trying to go on and do my FaceTime Live today, Facebook Live. It was interesting because I'm functioning with no food, no coffee, no nothing. So I am going to let it do what it do until I can get off this air and go get me something to eat. So until then, like I said, I want to thank you loyal listeners for joining me here. Now, today we're going to have a very exciting show. Now, the show is basically interesting because we live in a society now where a lot of times parents tell their young girls, you know, you can be whatever you want. We have these dreams. We have these fantasies. We have these ideas. Now, many of us as a child, and like I said, we had these dreams. We had a dream of either becoming an athlete, joining the military, obtaining a professional career, or becoming a first responder. And many of these careers, however, occurred within a predominantly male-dominated field. Now, as a young lady, one became an adult. Many obtained an education. They received professional training and prepared for their dream careers, only later to have become maybe disappointed or have dealt with a lot of challenges and other things by the nature. Many have endured the challenges that many of authority either have closed their eyes or refused to believe that such challenges or attitudes, perceptions, and behaviors even still exist. Now, we witnessed this in our last political election, as we know, when we had a female running for president. It exists in boardrooms, in the military, within law enforcement, and even within our first responders. So that is to tell, now, with all that, what are we supposed to tell our daughters now, our granddaughters, or our little sisters, as they may want to either save lives or make a difference in the world? Yet, many careers are still dominated by men. And this is to say, this matter can no longer be ignored. Many women have walked into male-dominated careers or workplaces and perform well, yet many do not receive the promotion or the recognition that they deserve. A woman do not need to be discriminated against, mistreated, harassed, have to sacrifice their values, reinvent their personalities, or be underpaid. So today's show is not to break people down. It is to educate others and to break those gender biases that continue to exist. So if you are a male out there and you struggle with females working within your field, or if you are a female that is going through some things at your place of employment that is predominantly male-dominated, give me a call, 516-387-1914. So let me log on my guest.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jeanette. How are you doing?
Doing okay.
I want to thank you for. I'm doing well. I want to thank you for joining me. So today we have on the air Arthur Allison Brooks, and Allison Brooks is the author of a book entitled From Hell to Fire. Allison, I want to thank you for joining me today, but I first want to say, as I was preparing for this, and I'm getting tongue-tied every time I try to say predominantly, because I guess I don't like that word. So even when I was doing my Facebook Live, I kept stuttering with it. So predominantly meaning, you know, is dominated by one, either male, gender, race, creed, whatever. But by that same token, Allison, I noticed that when I was talking to our other cousin, Cedric, who's supposed to be joining us, you know, we have a really talented family. Don't you think so?
Yeah,
we got
course.
People in our family doing a lot of stuff that we didn't even realize that we perhaps would even be able to do. So I want to thank you. Now, tell us a little bit about who you are and what led to you in regards to writing your book, From Hell to Fire.
It was a long and windy journey at best that led me to where I am now. I spent approximately 14 years in the fire service. I started when I was 17 as a junior firefighter or a fire explorer. When I finished my last year at Centennial High School in Compton, I was simultaneously volunteering as an explorer, fire explorer at the time. Once I was done with high school, I knew that's what I wanted for a career. My mind was completely made up. And as a result of that, I went ahead and joined the Compton Jim Schoen Fire Academy, and I became a reserve firefighter. And I volunteered a total of 5 years before getting picked up full-time with the Compton Fire Department. I worked from age 22 until they retired me when I was 30 years old due to a disability. But that's what I was a firefighter right out of high school. Again, that's what I wanted, and that's what I became. The book covers me between the ages of 22 to 25 years of age, at least the first one does. So you're going to read the book and not hear about modern-day technology and things like that. But before I get into that, that's a synopsis of who I am.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's interesting because a lot of times we think of a firefighter, we think of a little boy, you know, with a fire hose, a fire truck. You know, normally when little girls are growing up, we give them dolls, paper dolls, Barbie dolls. We don't give them the fire engine like we do young men. And then a lot of times, like you said, you knew at a very young age this is what you wanted to do. You know, the only thing I can think about as a fire department is, you know, you guys get to eat, you get to shop, got to spend a night at the fire station, you know, because at one point I dated a firefighter, and I was like, I got to learn about the fire department. So it was quite interesting. Now, when we look at women in firefighting and the training that individuals have to go through, now we know that firefighting was formerly an all-male profession, while it's dominated by both men in profession and volunteer context today, there are women who fight fires alongside their male counterparts. Now, I have some information, and it goes into the histories and the origins of firefighting. But I have a question for you, Allison, because like you said, this was something you wanted to do. You volunteered. You know, did you think about the physical part that was going to be entailed with becoming a firefighter?
Of course I did. In fact, when I was a senior. Of course, if you've ever finished high school, you know as a senior, one of the last things you have to do is you don't have to participate in gym or PE anymore at that point. In fact, if you were successful, the only two classes you have to take as a senior in high school is government, English, and of course, economics. Now, what I did was instead of having a bunch of electives, and then of course I was in the band, I was a Centennial marching band. But instead of my taking advantage of having a bunch of electives, I went ahead and I took gym. And most of the kids were shocked. Well, why is she here? She doesn't have to be here. She never flunked gym. She passed and blah, blah, blah. So, of course, my football coach took the liberty of sharing with the other students. She can dress and not dress whenever she chooses to. This is one of her electives. She's not here as the other seniors because they have to get it to graduate. She's here training to become a firefighter. So with that, of course, the guys showed me how to do regular what they call military-style push-ups. They showed me how to do proper pull-ups. And then that's, of course, when my journey began, right there again in my senior year at Centennial High School, learning how to do very physical activities. I changed The book is interesting. I mean, it, like I said before, the first book covers me between 22, which is literally a couple of months before I got sworn in, all the way up until I was about 24, the first book. But the second book is going to go more into my physical training. Now you're starting to see me lose what we call baby fat, and I'm running. I got from running just one block a day up to 5 miles a day. At the time, I also had asthma. So there I was, chubby black girl in the city of Compton, had asthma, had everything going against me, and then finally become a volunteer firefighter, and it was a predominantly white male career at that. So, yes, I did have to prepare not only physically but mentally.
Correct. So it sounds like you had to do double work. Now I have a question. I don't want to say that I heard something, but did you say you're a football coach? You play football?
No.
Because it sounds like you said you're a football coach. I'm like, wait a minute, did you do that too?
No.
You know,
no,
it's funny because I'm sitting up here thinking, I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of running. And when you're talking about the band, I used to get mad at Mr. Roberts in the band when I was a drum majorette. First, I was a drum major, then I was a drum major. I'm like, oh, this exercise, and I don't think I want a job where we got to do a lot of exercise. And I remember when I first started out in my career, I started off in law enforcement, and I remember applying for a position with the Oceanside Police Department, and we had to do the physical agility. Lord, I could not run and get over that wall. I kept trying to practice that wall. I would run, I'd get up to the wall, do baby steps, trying to flip over. So I finally mastered it. I said, you know what? This is too much for me. I don't think I could do a job where I got to do all this running and walking and carrying stuff. Only thing I wanted to do, the fun part for me was playing with the gun. When you got to pull the trigger to see how fast you could pull the trigger, I could do that part. But the running part was not for me. Now, like we said, in regards to historically, like I said, women have always been involved in firefighting. For an example, First Nations used women and continue to use women as a way of managing their lands, young women in boarding houses. You know, we were taught the fire drills, including the high ladder rescues. But then things got quite challenging. Now, when women, and we start talking about being employed as a paid firefighter, and this is some of the information that I'm getting from the history of female firefighters, is in part it's because they felt that women did not fit the popularist firefighting image. And in part because of most cultures, because this is not just in the United States, this is all across the world. Women were largely looked at in regards to the domestic and the private spheres and were considered unsuited to dangerous or physical work such as firefighting. Allison, would you say that that image has kind of changed or is it still the same in regards to the male's perspective of a woman coming in there trying to fight a fire?
Not at all. And that was the shocker as I was writing this book. Now, mind you, I've been asked, because obviously this book, all the things in it took place more than 20 years ago now. And people often came up to me and said, you should write a book. You should write a book. And I said, for what? I mean, I'm a firefighter, true. But at the time, I saw myself as being one of a large family, just one of the guys or just another firefighter. I didn't see the fact that, wait a minute, you're black, you're a woman, you grew up in Compton, you were a firefighter in Compton, and I mentioned that I volunteered in Compton, but I also had the opportunity to go through L.A. City's drill tower. I got a chance to participate with Inglewood's drill tower, so I went through many different fire departments training, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, when I was writing this book, because I did go ahead and decide last March to go ahead and start writing the book, I said, you know what? Who's going to be able to relate to this in this day and age? Because in my mind, it was going to be ancient information. This is something that happened over 20 years ago. These girls are not going to be able to relate to this. I'm sure things are much, much better. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I started writing this book before the Me Too movement became popular, before the Harvey Weinstein case became popular, on and on and on my mind wandered until around October of last year when the floodgates of all these issues with different women's groups, different minority groups, they were protesting and they were protesting hard. I said, oh, my goodness. And by then I was done with the book.
Wow. You know, I'm looking at some information and talking about it in the United States. The first known female firefighter in the United States was a slave from New York named Molly Williams, who was said to be as good as the fire ladies as many of the boys, and fought fires during the 1800s. And in 1820s, Marina Betts, she was a volunteer firefighter in Pittsburgh. There was a lady by the name of Lily Hitchcock, was made an honorary member of the Knickerbocker Engine Company No. 5 in San Francisco and in 1863 and fought fires for some years after. In the 1910s, there were women volunteer in companies, which was called Silver Springs, Maryland, and Los Angeles, California, which is kind of where you pretty much fought fires. So it basically wasn't until like the 1910s. So you know what I just learned too? I thought that I was one of the earliest retirees, but I guess we kind of neck and neck because what I went through in Oceanside with the Oceanside Unified School District, even though it was a different realm of work, Lord, what I went through with there, I had to retire too at a very young age. So you know what? Retired pretty young. And there's a lot of things that goes along with that. And I want to say too, and you was mentioning some of these different movements as we talk about, you know, the biases, the gender biases, the harassment and things of that nature. And people get discriminated on a lot of different areas. It could be age, it could be sex, it could be gender, it could be race. And you know what? And your socioeconomic status. A lot of times, people underestimate individuals. Now, that's not to say that, you know, women are trying to go in, because I remember when they used to have that commercial. I don't know if you remember, with the lady with the bandana around her head, when they were talking about the feminist movements, and a lot of individuals felt that women should not be in certain careers and jobs. My thing was, who are you to say? Now, I know me as a woman, I'm not going to go out there because I don't want to do a lot of hard labor. I don't want to be swimming. I don't want to be. So I learned to stay in my lane. But for those young ladies that have the desire to do these things, they should at least be given a chance. And individuals need to work on their attitudes and their beliefs and their perceptions. Now, what do you think about that, Allison, when I talk about a person's attitude? What was the attitude that you saw?
Wow, we can go on and on and on with that. There's one attitude that they allowed me to see. There was an attitude that they allowed the public to see. And then, of course, there was the private attitude, which was an overwhelming bias at best. They did not want the public to believe that they were racist, or that they were biased toward having women there. But I always say the proof is in the pudding. You have to look at not what people say, but you have to look at what they do. Oh, sure, blacks are welcome. Sure, women are welcome. Now, ask yourself, okay, well, if they're welcome, where are they on these departments?
Good question.
because I reside about 30 miles outside of Seattle. My husband and I were in downtown Seattle just this past Saturday. We were downtown Seattle, and I saw a station, and they had the bay doors open in the front. And I said, it doesn't look like they're leaving. In fact, why don't we go and say hi to the guys? I like visiting different stations. And I went by, and, of course, it was nothing there but white males.
Mm-hmm.
There were approximately 8 guys in the station, every last one being white men. Now, mind you, they were very friendly. And I introduced myself, let them know that I was a retired acting captain from the city of Compton. And they introduced themselves. Of course, we started talking about the differences between Compton and, of course, Seattle. Compton's only a small 10 square mile city, whereas Seattle's about the size of Los Angeles. And so we had a very interesting conversation. But I don't believe that these guys are aware of the fact that we're all white guys in this station. There's no diversity here. I don't believe it bothers them one bit. I don't believe many of them even think in terms of why isn't there more diversity in our careers. I believe they're happy as the way things are. I don't believe they want change, and that's fine. No one can tell someone how to exist as a human. But the one thing I have noticed is that once there's diversity, those same guys turn around and start complaining and saying, what about us? In fact, it's not my opinion. It's a matter of fact that in the EEOC, now, here's a shocker. I learned in my statistics class when I was becoming a fire captain that 60% of all equal opportunity lawsuits are filed by white men. Who knew?
Wow.
60% of all equal occupational lawsuits are filed by white males on the federal level. And so we talk about all these different minority groups, and we talk about things being put in place to protect them. They're not only in place to protect us, they're in place to protect everyone, with white males taking advantage of most of these programs.
Wow.
Fact,
well, you know what, and that's true, because I always, one of the things, reason why I like doing the show and talking on the radio is because it helps to empower and it helps to educate individuals, even within the school systems. You know, when we want to put kids on IEPs and they don't understand the 504 plans, there's a lot of things that we need to learn more about, because I remember we going through the EEOC when I was dealing with the Orange County. And, I mean, we've had to fight many battles. Because I remember even when I was trying to go into law enforcement in San Diego County, and they tried to tell me that I wasn't qualified. And I filed a complaint, and I had to go before the Civil Service Commission. And I will never forget meeting with the guy, and we had to go up the elevator, and his name was Dick somebody, his name was D-I-C-K. But he told me, he said, after our meeting, he said, you know, Janae, you're good. He said, but we still don't have to hire you. I said, but one thing you can't say is that I'm not qualified. And the Civil Service Commission ruled in my favor, but I kind of gave up on wanting to go into the field because I didn't want to go in there and be mistreated. I didn't want to go in there because they would have been in for a rude awakening, because I was not having it. And I had already went through enough with the Oceanside Unified School District, so I was just trying to do things because I wanted to protect and serve. I wanted to make a difference. I had all of these dreams and desires of things that I wanted to do, but I didn't know anything about these challenges. Now, I want to say, and I like how you are putting this information out there, because when we talk about the challenges, and if anyone wants to call in, because even though we're talking about within the fire department, because Allison Brooks is the author of a book called From Hell to Fire, and she was once employed with the Compton Fire Department, if you want to call in, you want to share your story, give us a call, 516-387-1914, and she will also be sharing later on in the show how you can obtain her book, as we will also be giving women tips and tools and techniques, and also talking to men in regards to how they can also address their, we were talking about the attitudes, beliefs, and perceptions, because that plays a role when someone you feel is coming into your territory. Now, you talked a little bit about the attitude. What about the belief, Allison? What are some of the beliefs?
Well, one of the bigger myths that I had, because, I mean, change doesn't come fast and it doesn't happen overnight, and we're guilty of it too. So in the book, I went on to share how my own biases as a female, thinking, well, there aren't more women here because they just don't qualify, especially physically speaking, they don't qualify. I was wrong. They usually don't want us around for more political reasons than anything else. It wasn't that, oh, we're not strong enough. There were plenty of women that I met along the way, especially when it came to L.A. City and L.A. County Fire Department. Now, I don't want to paint a picture that there are an overwhelming or there's a huge number of women anywhere in this country as firefighters. There's not. And forget this country, just around the world, period. We're a very small group. We're a very small group. In fact, in the United States, women firefighters only account for about 1% of the fire industry to this day. And that's women of all colors. Now, you talk about black women, forget it. It's like finding a needle in a haystack.
You know what, and I'm going to say, I ain't never seen an African-American firefighter. I mean, I'm like, you know, one of my favorite movies is Django, when the man said, I ain't never seen an Ian on a horse. I ain't never seen a woman black firefighter. And I'm quite sure there's some out there, but I've never seen one. Wow. So the belief.
I'm the Alton of them in the L.A. County area. And there's probably not that many of them left anymore. I had a lot of girlfriends who were firefighters, most of whom were black, and there were probably, at the time, 8 of us at best. And, of course, half of us were volunteers. So So
wow.
To be
and you know, and that's another thing too. They'll keep you as a volunteer to kind of discourage you working you for free. Wow. Okay. So the perception.
One of the things
that perception light.
I want to. I'm sorry.
No, I said the perception. We spoke on attitudes, then we talked about beliefs, now the perception. Now, part of the perception is, like you said, what you see. Now, what was some of the perception of what you saw, and that's in your book, of the firefighter? What is that perception like?
Again, it's not a very welcoming or embracing career, and that goes for especially women, women of all groups. But as a black woman, forget about it. No one wants you there. We already have a very bad perception of blacks in America. It does not change because you get a badge on your chest or because you're becoming a doctor. And that goes for all careers, even with black doctors.
Mm-hmm.
They always look at us as if we somehow, we know less in our field. Somehow, some test somewhere or some governmental program helped us to get through the doors, which is absolutely
mm-hmm.
not the case. In fact, I had a young man share with my cousin Shantae. She's a nurse. She's an RN. Black nurses, usually they're from Nigeria, when they're even in America, they're from another country. You just don't run into African-American nurses who are actually born and raised in this country. You don't run into them when they're RNs. And, oh, my God, she has the opportunity to work as a charge nurse in the little company of Mary, of all hospitals, somewhere in Torrance. And we all know that that's a predominantly white community, and
mm-hmm.
especially a hospital like Little Company of Mary. I remember taking patients there, and that's a predominantly white hospital. She would show up, for instance, and work as a nurse, and they would automatically assume that she was a CNA, Certified Nurse's Assistant. And she would go,
wow.
Oh, no, honey, no, wait a minute, baby. I'm not only am I a registered nurse, I'm here to work as a charge nurse today. So I will be your supervisor for the next couple of weeks. And, oh, my goodness, watch all kinds of jaws hit the ground. So in the end, we are somehow, people believe that we have the bars lowered for us. We have to take the exact same exams everyone else has to take and pass with flying colors, and oftentimes we have to be better than everyone else to get the same to have the same exact accolades that everyone else received. Once you get your way through the door, you didn't just slide by because, oh, we need women, we need blacks. That's a bunch of malarkey.
Gotcha. And you know what? And I can speak in the field of being a therapist and being a business owner. I see it all the time. I have individuals come in, and if they see that I'm African-American, they want to walk out my door. Or if I say I'm from Compton, they feel that I'm ghetto. I'm like, I ain't never been ghetto, you know, but I can talk to people from or anyone from all walks of life, and that is that perception. And that perception really needs to change. And part of it is needs to change through education, through adjusting, basically dealing with your fears. Don't be afraid to ask questions, but don't try to humiliate anyone either. So respect. Respect is very big and is very much needed. Now, in regards to challenges, I'm looking at some information, and it says, and I'm going back to the fire department because, like I said, fire department, military, I was waiting on one of my church sisters to call because she dealt with a lot of stuff being a female in the military, which was interesting. But some of the challenges, since women have begun to be widely hired and accepted as volunteer firefighters in at least the past 30 to 40 years, there have been many difficult adjustments for the fire services. And in many places in this culture, they basically steeped in tradition and formalized what they call paramilitary relationships. Now, over time, even if women are socially accepted members of the fire services, it is on the basis of gendered assumptions that they will bring more balance, decision-making, and nurturing qualities to the team of firefighters. Now, I have some information, and this is basically, Allison, it talks about back in early as 2017, because the studies for 2018 are not out yet. But there was a study of female firefighters and occupational stress in the U.S. found that 40% of women had engaged in binge drinking in the previous month and 16.5% screened positive for problem drinking. Now, according to the study, problem drinkers were more than 2.5 at least likely to have been diagnosed with depressive disorders or have symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Those with less than 7 years of service are most likely to report issues with drinking. And I'm also, as a licensed therapist, I work with first responders. So I get to work with individuals that are within law enforcement, that work for the fire department, paramedics, as a EAP provider. And it's interesting because PTSD is really big with first responders. And a lot of it is because of the calls that they go out on, what they see, the day-to-day stress. And when you are a woman in this field and you are getting stuff on top of your day-to-day stuff, tell the listeners a little bit, Allison, what that is like.
Dealing with PTSD, that comes with the territory, unfortunately. You're going to have more than your share of things that everyday people just plain do not see. A lot of people think it's stressful being a police officer. Well, our scientific studies don't show that at all. In fact, scientific studies show us that being a firefighter is the second most stressful job in the nation, right under being the president. That was a shocker for me. Again, I learned all these different stats when I started taking management classes to become a fire captain, and I learned all these different numbers. These numbers, again, they're some 20 or more years old because that's when I was doing my schooling. But nowadays we have Google, so I'm sure the numbers are probably very similar, if not the same. But again, PTSD, that comes with the territory of being a firefighter. I hate to be this graphic. There, for instance, many a times I've seen decapitations. There is no way you're going to take a decapitated person to the hospital. You're not going to do anything but call the coroner's office at that point. So there are a lot of people out there that they're so mangled and so a lot of times even beyond mangled, beyond recognition. And all we can do is get out there, pronounce them dead, and call the coroner's office. And those are the things that firefighters deal with on a daily basis, especially inner city firefighters, L.A. County firefighters, and firefighters in larger departments that deal with drive-by shootings, deal with gang violence, deal with drug violence, and things of that nature. And then, of course, all firefighters have to deal with traffic collisions. But we do see a lot out there.
And, you know, when you were saying that, I was thinking, too, I remember not only just the fires, just going in the home and there's a fire or there's a drowning, because in a lot of areas in L.A., some individuals have pools, and a lot of kids drown, especially during the summertime, the summer months. So those are some of the things that individuals have to deal with. And PTSD, which, for those that don't realize, is post-traumatic stress disorder, and it has to do with a tragic event. It could be one that experienced it, one that witnessed it, and one to even hear about it. And, you know, just basically from the things that you're sharing, and I appreciate you sharing these things in details, because a lot of individuals will experience this as a woman in a male predominant career, because there are certain challenges, certain things that they have to deal with, and that is part of it. Now, in regards to discrimination, now with discrimination in a male predominant career is very high. They did a study, and they also found, and it talks about even in Australia. In Australia, they found that 55% reported seeing gender discriminations of others, while 45% reported experiencing it themselves. Now, I know when you were talking about the EEOC and how many white male go to them in regards to filing federal claims, but a lot of times with the discrimination, do you think, Allison, that sometimes individuals just don't report for different reasons, because a lot of times it's a fear of losing their job. They don't want the stigma. They don't want to be harassed. What do you think about that in regards to filing discrimination? So do you think it's underreported?
Of course. Of course. Back when, again, when I was a fire explorer, I was told and showed, not only told, but I was showed to basically suck it up, Jeanette. That's the attitude. It comes, again, that's one of those things that comes with the territory. We're going to be discriminated against. They're going to treat us differently. And unfortunately, it came with the territory, and that's what I learned to do. I learned to just, whatever I was going through, there were times, now don't get me wrong, that I would share it with my, the firefighter who trained me, the firefighter that I was working under, I would share it with her, because she was all, everything that I was going through, she had already been through it and was still going through it. So, of course, we could talk, and that's one of the good things about being a female in the industry. Women usually come in villages and tribes. Even if they're not on the job, we have enough sense usually, and I hate to say it that way, but for us it's automatic. We're going to find someone to talk with, whether it's a spouse, it's a family member, it's other friends, other women
Correct.
In the industry. We find Correct. Each other, and we find our way to vent. Whereas a lot of times, unfortunately, with men, they don't cry out for help until it's too late. And I hate to use the expression too late, because to me it's never too late. But oftentimes they keep everything bottled in, whereas women, we share. So that's one of the things I learned to do early on. Whether it came with the situation or not, I learned to share my issues.
And that's good. That's good. And you know what? I'm going to tell you one thing that I learned, and I have a call I need to log on. I know when I was going through what I was going through in Oceanside, part of when you share and people think you're crazy, they think you're making that stuff up because you go on and on and on, because they say women are very emotional. But it gets to the point where you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and you're like, look, you ain't going to just treat me any kind of way. So one of the things I had to do was I had to learn to fight differently. Now, I just logged on a caller. Hi, this is Jeanette. Welcome to Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Jeanette. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I see you didn't really forget about us, but okay.
Okay. No, I didn't.
Well, thank you for joining us here.
I don't want to step on Allison's toes. I just wanted her to shine, and I was just going to jump in and put my two cents in until I'm finished with the book. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you have your two cents to jump in, so we might need 2, 4, 6, 8. And part of it is, too,
okay.
Because I know with your background, here's my other cousin, Cedric Boyd. And, Cedric, you
right.
worked in more of the law enforcement part in regards to probation. And that's also
right.
a male-dominant career, where dealing with law enforcement and the training. You know, I don't know. I'm quite sure they made you have to go through the post academy and do all of that stuff in law enforcement, because, you know, I was going to have to do that, too. Now, I don't want to throw you under the bus, because I know you do a lot of work and, you know, in regards to what you do. But what did you see in regards to your career as far as females? And I want to hear, what was your attitude and perception and belief with women in that career, with you being a male?
For me, it really wasn't an issue. Like, when I was reading all that stuff that Allison had to go through, you know, I was disturbed. You know, I was like, this is some nonsense right here. You know, this woman's just trying to do her job. So, you know, I have two older sisters, so I don't have that perception at all of women in law enforcement or, you know, like a male dominated area. Our department was pretty good about that. I didn't really see a lot of that, but I definitely understand that it exists. But our department was, you know, we had a female chief at one point in time. She wasn't very good. That had anything to do with her being a female. You know, she was just horrible at it, you know. But
mm-hmm.
for the most part, but the kind of stuff that Allison was talking about, I know it goes on, but I didn't understand it went on to that extent, maybe because I didn't participate in that kind of behavior. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Now, I have a question.
But,
let's say, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, okay? Let's
okay.
say you are in a high paid position and a female came to you and was telling you that they're being sexually harassed or, you know, people are doing things and saying things and, you know, making non-threatening or, you know, how would you handle that? What would be the protocol? Because do a protocol even exist?
I've had that happen before. I've had a coworker that was a subordinate come to me saying that a gentleman that we worked with was even a little, like he crossed some boundaries that she wasn't comfortable with. So I addressed it with her. I addressed it with him while she wasn't there, and the situation got cleared up. She felt comfortable enough to come to me. There's been a few women that felt comfortable enough to come to me, but she in particular was like, this guy's making me really uncomfortable. He makes a lot of creepy, underhanded comments, you know. So I tried to address it at its lowest level possible, and then if it continued, I would have brought it to my superiors, but he stopped, you know. But I would definitely see where some guys wouldn't stop, you know, where
mm-hmm.
some guys would keep crossing the line. And like the stuff that they were doing to Allison was completely out of control. You know, I mean, I like the way I talked to her about it, but I like the way she fought back. You know, her girlfriend told her, wait a minute, you're smarter than these dudes. Do this, this, and this. And I was just laughing, picturing her doing it. And the effect, because I know the effect it would have, it was just really brilliant, but it shouldn't have to come to that. She's there to do a job, you know, and the other ladies are there to do a job. So I don't even feel like it's my place to do that to anybody. You know
what
I mean?
Well, thank you for acknowledging that too, Cedric, because, again, most of the time the problem I was having, when you read the book, you're going to find out in a lot of cases my times were coming in faster when we were being drilled. And
right.
Timed with the drills, because it's not often that we get timed. But when I was timed with my drills as a probationary firefighter, for instance, with ropes and knots, I was faster than most guys. Putting
right.
on breathing
right.
apparatuses and equipment, I was faster than most guys.
Right.
And wonderful, whatever. We were all good enough to do the job, which is why we were hired in the first place. They just want to make sure you stay on your toes and that we never – especially as a probationary firefighter, that you don't
right.
start to become complacent. They want to make sure you're
right.
always sharp and at your best. But again, you're going to find out that you would think, oh, they're picking on her because maybe she's just not good enough, or maybe she's having some problem in some area, when it was just the other way around. They picked on me and bullied me when they saw that I was faster, I was better. That's when my problems and my issues, 90%, came from that.
Yeah, I could definitely see guys doing that, you know. I mean, I could definitely see that happening. And the way you were laying it out, I was like, yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that happening. But I feel like the department that I worked at was pretty good. In the area that I worked at was pretty good about it. We had a lot of female supervisors. You know, some that weren't, you know, they didn't take any guff, because I'm sure they've been through that kind of, you know, that kind of behavior. So they weren't going to let that fly. You know, they were in your face, you know. You know what I mean?
And
you
know,
another
thing I wanted to share with you right quick. That's one of the things that I was taught not to do early on. Sheila laid it out clear as day. You could either be a professional firefighter or you can become a professional litigant. It's up to you.
Right.
You can sue these guys.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you definitely have a leg to stand on if you take any of these harassment claims up to upper management and open up a lawsuit, or you can just come here, do your job, and go home. So, of course, we don't, as Jeanette mentioned earlier, there's a lot of times women just let that go and let it go and sweep it under the rug, as they say, until that rug starts to grow legs and move around, and then they have
Correct.
To do something about it.
Right.
And you know, one of the things I want to say is I was thinking, because a lot of times in women and predominantly male careers, they want you to look masculine, and then some women still look feminine. And, you know, sometimes they could be intimidated by the fact, or they could be attracted to the woman, they could feel rejected by the woman, the woman could be much smarter, more articulate. So there's a lot of things that be going on in people's mind to where, like I said, if you don't know, talk to the person. Don't just assume. Now, we start even talking about just the sexual harassment, and studies have found that women working in a male-dominant profession, such as firefighters, fighting, or police, law enforcement, in a lot of different careers, even in the military, they experience more sexual harassment than those working in traditional female professions. And this increased rate of harassment is worsened further when women are in the minority, as they are often are in the fire service, because the majority of groups, such as circumstances, tend to view those as taking a representative rather than other individuals. And like I said, when you're more attractive, when you're much smarter, they have a problem with that. Now, Allison, what do you think in regard to that? If women that are more feminine that have these, are working in these male predominant roles?
I'll put it to you this way. Well, I want to put it to you exactly the way it was with the two of us in Compton. Compton only had two of us there. Now, Sheila is a very good-looking girl. Bottom line, this girl is very attractive. She put on her normal everyday clothes, let her hair down out of that ponytail, and the girl could be a runway model. You understand? If she had the height, she could.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then, again, I'm not an ugly girl. I'm very attractive, especially in my 20s, in shape and whatnot, and very shapely girl on top of that. We're both very shapely women, both very attractive women. And, again, mm-hmm. on regular streets, I was a tomboy. Now, and so was Sheila. She was into her sports, too. But Sheila was very effeminate with her street attire at times. She could either dress up and put on her jeans and T-shirts, tennis shoes like I did, or she could dress up and put on her dresses, skirts, or whatnot. And she believed in wearing her makeup. I didn't wear a lot of mm-hmm. makeup. I was on the other side of the tomboy pendulum, where I plain, old-fashioned, didn't do the makeup, didn't do any of that. But I was always what they call a voluptuous woman. I was always very curvy, put the uniform on. The curves didn't go anywhere. All they did was mm-hmm. stay with a uniform around the curves, and you could still see the curves.
Well, you know, we kind of got that honest. You know, we Lord, they say it ain't my booty, it's my beauty, or my booty, well, vice versa. So I get that part. Now,
we're going into those.
I know, people like, dang, y'all got to say all of that. You know,
but part of that,
when we're talking about the harassment, is a lot of times that stuff gets thrown up in people's faces. People start making unwelcome comments, and a lot of those things lead to the harassment. Now, we only have 12 minutes left on the show, and I do want to go into detail so Allison can share, but I want to put some things out there in regards to what can we do. Like I said, we have to work on individuals as far as their attitudes, beliefs, and perceptions. And also, these women are coming in to do a job because they feel and they want to make a difference. And they shouldn't have to go through a lot of things that they go through in regards to trying to do their job, in regards to, you know, the different discrimination, the harassment, and it's totally out of control, and it really needs to stop. And some women could take it, like you said, Allison, you learned how to fight differently. You retired early. I did the same thing. But you know what? People are at the point now where they're like, we ain't taking this no more. You're not going to just mistreat us. And it's not that women are just trying to take over, or they're trying to make it to where all women get to do this. But there should be opportunities, because if you learn to work together as a team, you can make certain departments, certain organizations run so smoothly. Now, I had a female firefighter friend, and she went through hell, too. And she worked for the Fullerton Fire Department. And I thank God for her, because she introduced me to Seroptimus. I enjoyed her. And when she was going through what she was going through, and it just was not fair. Now, they can't ignore females anymore, and women are basically learning how to basically, like I said, fight differently, and they're making their voices be heard. Now, I have some information, and it has, you know, because they have stats as far as women that have filed lawsuits, you know, different things that they've done. There are several different cases. This one is in Springfield, Virginia, and there were two, and this is as late as May 23rd, 2018, just to let you know this is still going on, where two high-ranking women in the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department in Northern Virginia filed federal civil rights charges on Wednesday that the department punished them for trying to oppose what they said was a long pattern of sex discrimination and harassment. In 2016, the department drew national notoriety after suicide rate of female firefighters who had been bullied on the Fairfax County message board. And I wanted to talk about that too, Allison, because there is a disproportionate number in regards to suicidality as far as female firefighters too, because they can't take it anymore. And I remember years ago there was a case in Oceanside where a woman sued the Oceanside Police Department, and then they said she committed suicide. Now, I refuse to believe that after that woman got all that money, there was no way she would go kill herself. But that was, you know, it is what it is, but I don't think she did it. Now, when you talk about that, even regards to suicide, it says, but the women in Wednesday's case, and they say their name, they were both battalion chiefs, said the fire department had not changed. They filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the federal agency that enforces civil rights lawsuits against workplace discrimination, arguing that the department took action against them after they pressed for discipline against a male harasser and fair treatment for women. The federal discrimination case follows others against fire department in Houston and Chicago and comes as the country continues to reckon policies with sexual harassment in the workplace. And that's why they implemented those laws. Now, Allison, I know we have 9 minutes left in the show. Tell the listeners what you want to tell them about your book, and then tell them where they can find your book.
Okay, well, let's get the easy part out of the way first. You can buy From Hell to Fire, everywhere books are sold. In fact, just Google From Hell to Fire by Allison Brooks, and you can order it, again, anywhere books are sold. Just go ahead and upload it. It's only $4.99. I made sure to price it where everyone could afford it. And this book is not only talking about the fire service. I let the readers follow me home and go with me on a couple of dates. I let them see what my private life looked like at the time as well. I didn't want to lose them with all the what we call guts and glory, because that can only go so far, at least in my opinion. The readers would have gotten bored if they were just to go home and now here I am, turn the lights off, I'm asleep. Get up the next day, here we go. We're back at the fire station, and she's putting up with these guys. She's seeing all these graphic images. No, you get to follow me home. You get to see a little bit of what I'm also doing with my music career, because I was also studying to become a recording engineer at the time. So I let you come with me to the recording studio once or twice in the book, and it's a well-rounded story. So far, I've heard nothing bad about it. Of course, it was written in a street language. I kept the language the way I spoke at the time. I cursed a lot. I cursed enough to make a sailor blush, as they say. And so I kept it in that same genre. It's a lot of slang, a lot of cursing. It's not a Christian book by no stretch of imagination. I kept it real, as they say. Again, it's a well-rounded read. It's a very fast read. That's, and again, the only negative feedback I got was that, yes, there's a lot of cursing, there's a lot of sex, and that kind of stuff in the book. Now, with women, again, the only advice I have for all of us, and this is men too, especially men, when you see something, say something, and find your group that you can share with. Start with one person. Build on that. you look up again, you'll go from one to two people you can share with. Then you turn around in a few months, you'll have an entire group of people you can call and share with. Make sure that you're allowed to do a good percentage of the talking, especially if you're the only first responder in that group. It's urgent that we all talk. Put the cell phones down. Put the tablets down. Put your electronic devices down and talk. Because even though we have access to millions of people, studies show that people who separate themselves from their electronic devices at least a couple of hours at the end of their day and talk physically with someone in the same room, or if you don't have anyone and you live by yourself, pick up the phone and physically call someone. Don't be so
one of the things you're saying, Alice, is like, don't isolate yourself, because suicide is no joke. And like I said, because when we're looking at the suicide rate, we're looking at depression, we're looking at PTSD. And I also want to say for those of you that are out there that basically have those jobs is therapy. Therapy, therapy, therapy. And the one thing I like with first responders now is I don't know if they had it back then, Allison, where they have EAP, which is an employee assistance program, where they are connecting them with licensed professional therapists in order to work on some of those issues. Now, if you, you know, we don't get involved in any lawsuits or anything like that, but we do help with reducing the anxiety, helping with stress-related matters, depression, if marital problems become an issue, because that's another one, Allison, too, is a lot of times that stress carries on over into your marriage and your relationships with other people. Eating disorders. We didn't touch much on the drinking because individuals will self-medicate because they have difficulties with coping skills. So I'm going to let you finish. So what are some of the other tips that you want to share with the listeners, but I also wanted to let them know about EAP services and therapy.
I believe that we have thoroughly covered what they need to do, and I'm glad you brought up the licensed therapist because, again, depending on how bad the situation was, they would bring psychologists. They would bring those in, they would bring in licensed therapists. Again, usually those happened when we lost one of our own. Like a firefighter, for instance, if they were killed on the job, if a police officer that we worked with was killed on the job, then they would bring the therapist to us. And also
counseling, yes.
And right. But again,
because a lot of times they're pride, they're afraid, they're ashamed, they don't want to go and talk to anyone, and they keep it bottled in. And like I said, and that's where the alcoholism becomes an issue. Alcohol, domestic violence, you know, they struggle. They really, really struggle, especially when you're going through some things. Now, Cedric, from a male perspective, what are some of the tips that you can give men from to help them to better relate and connect with women? Like you said, you have sisters, you have a mother. Now, you know better, and you know we come from a female family where it's female predominantly female, that we beat the men up. So you know you wouldn't go get away with no mess like that. I don't care how tall you are. But what are some of the things that you could share with men that could help them to better be able to connect with women?
I would just treat them like a human being, man. You know, like, I don't, like, reading that stuff that Allison was going through was disturbing for me. Because she didn't sign up for that. She signed up to do a job and to do it well, you know, which she did. But all this extra stuff that she had to deal with, is, you know, it wasn't like 1943. We're talking about the 90s. We're talking about mid-late 90s here, you know.
Well,
and,
you know what,
know
you would hate to have to write my book then, because if I start telling you my story, you're going to be like, what? For real?
Yeah, I mean, just the brutality of a job that she had to deal with, and then to deal with people not having her back. You know,
mm-hmm.
She was like Jackie Robinson out there, man. It was horrible. And these were brothers.
Well, part of it too, Cedric, is because people are afraid. They'll act like they're on your team until you got to go or you need a letter or you got, and then they act like they didn't see nothing, they didn't know nothing because they're afraid of their own job security. So I know what that's like because by the time I get finished writing letters, man, they swear I was Johnny Cochran's daughter because I had to the point where I was like, I ain't playing with y'all. Y'all ain't going to be messing with me like this. So y'all got me jacked up. And my mama sure didn't make it no better. I hated taking her to meetings. I used to think we all was going to go to jail. They was booing. He was like,
right.
I take my mother to Orange County. No, we ain't got no business down there. We all, I never forget what time this woman said, you people. By the time she said you people, the whole room left. It wasn't nobody sitting there but me and my family. And one of the ladies that was trying to help. So, but it definitely needs to stop. It really needs to stop. And like I said, it goes back to respect. Now, we have a minute left on the show. I want to thank you for joining me here at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget to look and get Allison's book, From Hell to Fire. She said that you can Google it. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it anywhere books are sold. I want to thank my other cousin, Cedric Boyd, for joining us here. Now, tomorrow's topic is going to be very interesting because I'm supposed to be on my 100th show. It looks like now the numbers are going backwards, so I know I'm not doing no kind of funny math, but I know it's show number 100. And the title is for the show, the episode is Don't Sit on Your Gifts, because just like I'm finding that we have a very talented family, we have done a lot of things. A lot of us have gifts inside of us that we haven't even birthed. Like I was listening to Allison talking about going into music. Cedric is writing books. You know, I'm doing radio. You know, I started off as a school bus driver. So we're going to not sit on our gifts. So join me tomorrow, Precious Predicaments, Blog Talk Radio, as I will also have on the air Pastor Dan and Steph from Higher Dominion Worship Center. So, again, until then, remember, you got this. Thank you, cousins.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.